Do you love true crime podcasts and true crime documentaries?
If so, you gotta check out our podcast, True Crime Obsessed, where we recap the true crime documentaries everybody's watching.
We say everything you're thinking and probably screaming at your TV.
We've been at the top of the podcast charts for almost 9 years, and we have over 400 episodes for you to check out right now.
We cover the cases everyone's talking about, and we also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
With over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now's the time to give us a try.
Find True Crime Obsessed wherever you get your podcasts. Everyone, I'm Sam.
And I'm Sean.
And this is Key to the Case. Thank you all for joining us today and every week. Or if you're new here, welcome to the show. We want to give a special thank you to our listener, Caitlin, for sharing today's case with us. I'd never heard of this disappearance before, and it will be the most recent case we have ever covered. Let's get into it. Grady Benson, better known as Bruce Benson, was 69 years old at the time of his disappearance in 2022. Bruce grew up in Cotton County, Oklahoma, near the small town of Randlett. It truly is a small town with just about 300 residents. In 1971, when Bruce was 18, he met a young woman named Maxine while she worked at a truck stop that he would stop at. Bruce was interested in Maxine, and they began dating shortly after they met. After seeing each other for about a year and a half, the pair got married, and at the time of Bruce's disappearance, they were coming up on their 50th wedding anniversary. Bruce was a farmer his entire life, and he and Maxine lived on a sizable property about 10 miles outside of Randlett. Maxine shared with News Nation in 2023 that Bruce lived within a one-mile radius his entire life. He lived in two different homes growing up in that area, and then when they got married and purchased their home and property together, they never left. Bruce and Maxine had one child together, a son named Grady, who lived just across the pasture from them, less than a half mile away. Grady had two children, a son and daughter, both of whom are in their 20s and live nearby as well. Bruce adored Maxine, Grady, and his two grandchildren. They were all very close with each other. In 2016, Bruce retired and Grady took over their wheat farming business, which included various farms around Cotton County. Bruce has been described as hardworking and kind. It's been frequently reported that Bruce was kind to everyone, and Maxine has stated that he never had conflict with anyone in his entire life, which is quite remarkable and rather unheard of. Despite the fact that Bruce was getting older, Maxine has shared that he had no health concerns, he was still active, and even though he was retired, it seemed to me that he still worked on the farm in some capacity. On Tuesday, November 8th, 2022, Bruce and Maxine drove to Temple, Oklahoma, roughly a 20-minute drive away from their home to vote in the midterm elections. They got groceries before they returned home, and that evening, Maxine baked a pie. The following day, November 9th, Bruce and Maxine each had a piece of pie for breakfast, and Maxine got ready for a trip she had planned. She and a few girlfriends were headed to Branson, Missouri, early Thursday morning, which is about 6.5 hours away from where they lived, and Maxine intended to return home Saturday night. Before her departure, she and Bruce went to dinner at a restaurant called Bill's Fish House with longtime friends of theirs, including some of the women that Maxine would be going on the trip to Branson with. Everyone they shared dinner with reportedly recalled Bruce being in good spirits, and he behaved as he always did. There was no reason to be concerned for him. After dinner, Bruce and Maxine said their goodbyes as Maxine was leaving with her girlfriends who were also going on the trip to Branson. The bus they planned to take was leaving at 6 a.m. the following day, so I guess it made more sense for Maxine to stay the night at one of their homes rather than to go home and get up really early the next day and leave from her home.
So did Bruce have any plans while Maxine was going to be away in Branson, or was he just going to just kind of hang around the house? Or
yeah, I don't know of any plans that he may have had. I don't think he had any set plans. I know when they got groceries together, Maxine said they did that to make sure there'd be plenty of stuff at home for him while she was gone. So it kind of sounded like he would probably spend most of his time around his home. So Bruce helped Maxine load her luggage into her friend's vehicle. They kissed goodbye. And one of the last things Bruce said to Maxine was that he would see her Saturday night. Bruce then set out on the 20-minute drive back home. Once he arrived back to his property at around 8 p.m., he came across his son, Grady, who was working in one of the fields near Bruce and Maxine's home, which is also near Grady's home. Bruce stopped to give Grady some food from the restaurant. It's unclear if Bruce brought this back specifically for Grady or if he had leftovers that he just decided to pass on to him. Might seem like an irrelevant detail, but I wanted to understand if Bruce expected Grady to be there when he came home. But considering Grady was working when he got there and he was probably they're working often, it seems reasonable to think that he knew Grady would be there and brought the food for him. Bruce followed Grady, who was in a plow, up to the barn that's near their house. Bruce shined his lights on the plow so Grady could see the tires. Now, some sources say Bruce helped him fix a flat tire on the plow, while others say he just needed to air up a couple of tires. Grady told KDFX News the following about what happened next. Quote, I circled around. He was standing by his pickup and the garage was open. He said, I might not stick my head out tomorrow. I've got a little bit of a cough, but don't think anything of it. End quote. Grady said he would see him the next day regardless. And the garage that was open was the garage to the barn, not to the home. I don't think they actually had a garage attached to their house.
Did Maxine or any other friends at that dinner that they all went to notice a cough, or did they mention a cough?
No one he ate dinner with seemed to recall him having a cough or even seeming off at all over the course of the evening. I think it's interesting that Bruce told Grady he had a bit of a cough considering no one recalled him having one. I mean, maybe the cough was minor, so nobody noticed, but Grady thought nothing of this comment from his father, and he continued working.
It's a pretty easy thing to notice, though.
Right. It's not like he said he had a headache and no one would be able to tell, right? Yeah. A cough is a visible thing, usually.
Visible and audible.
Yes, that's what I meant. Audible thing. I mean, you can see it too, I guess. But yeah, it's interesting of all things for him to have going on. And sometimes when Grady recounts this situation, he doesn't always mention this part of the story, I've noticed. I don't know if that's editing on the part of the news outlets he's interviewing with. They don't always include that, but I have noticed it's not included every single time. And I don't know if, again, it's editing or maybe he just doesn't say it every time because he doesn't think it's that relevant. Maxine texted Bruce that night, and when she didn't get a response right away, she was not surprised because Bruce was not much of a texter. He had a flip phone, and he was more inclined toward face-to-face conversations and phone calls from what I could tell. However, he would typically respond when Maxine texted him, maybe just not right away. Around 11:15 p.m., Maxine texted him again to tell him goodnight, to which she received no response. She anticipated a call from Bruce because she thought surely he was still awake. So Bruce must have been the type to stay up late, but Maxine waited for a call she never received. Additionally, her calls to Bruce went unanswered. The next day, Thursday, November 10th, passed with no communication from him. Grady didn't see his father that day, but considering Bruce indicated he might not come out, he didn't have a reason to be too alarmed by his absence.
When Maxine didn't get a response from Bruce, did she call Grady to see if he had recently seen him?
Not on Thursday. They didn't seem to communicate on Thursday, but by Friday, Maxine's worry peaked. And at that point, she called Grady and asked him to go to the house to check on his father. Grady's first thought was that maybe there was something wrong with Bruce's phone and he was unable to communicate with Maxine. When Grady got to the house that morning, he noticed all of their vehicles were there, Bruce's pickup was parked under their carport, and the barn garage was closed. Grady knocked on the front door and didn't receive an answer, but he thought Bruce might still be sleeping, so he left with the plan of coming back around lunchtime.
Did Grady have a key to the house?
I think he did, because he does ultimately end up going in the house. So he must have had a key, a spare key, but he did not go in at that time. I mean, Bruce's truck was there, so he probably thought, oh, surely he's inside just sleeping. I think it was pretty early. When he returned and still received no answer, he began to grow worried. So he used his presumed spare key to go inside the house, and Bruce was nowhere to be found. You may or may not have noticed that when Grady last spoke with his dad, the garage was open and his pickup, I don't think I stated this part, but the pickup wasn't pulled under the carport. So that means after Grady left Bruce pulled the truck in under the carport and shut the barn garage, which would lead one to believe that Bruce was headed inside. And I don't know if this matters, but the house and the carport are not connected. From the pictures I saw, I'd estimate they're just about 20 to 30 yards apart, so still pretty close. Grady was concerned when he noticed that Bruce's truck was unlocked. Inside, sitting on the driver's seat, he found Bruce's keys, cell phone, and his wallet that contained about $200. Some sources indicate that the red jacket he wore the night he was last seen was inside the car as well. You might think in such a rural area that it's not all that strange for someone to leave these kinds of items in their vehicle, but according to Maxine, it would be highly unusual not only for him to leave those items in his truck, but also for him to leave his truck unlocked. So what caused Bruce to deviate from his normal behavior? Later, Maxine would say that since those items were inside his truck, she believed all he would have had on his person would be chapstick, a pocket knife, and her car keys. Once Maxine learned from Grady that Bruce was missing, she and her girlfriends cut their trip short and they headed back to Oklahoma. When Grady was in their home, he noticed that there was a pair of boots Bruce recently purchased sitting next to the chair in the living room he was known to always sit in. There was a pair of socks laid out across the top of the boots. This detail is pointed out rather frequently in this case, and I wondered what the big deal was with the boots. I think the idea here is that Bruce likely would have worn those boots if he went out the day after he was last seen. And the night Bruce was last seen, he was wearing a pair of old Red Wing steel-toed boots. Those boots were not inside the home, nor were the clothes he wore that night. So I think this was one sign that Bruce never went in the house, or if he did, he wasn't inside for long. I'm not sure why the socks were on top of his new boots, but maybe this was something he did to kind of speed up the process of getting ready each day. When Maxine arrived home, she noticed right away that the pie she shared with Bruce had not been eaten since they each had a slice the morning of his disappearance. Apparently, Bruce had such a sweet tooth that Maxine just knew he would have eaten a piece of pie that night when he went inside the home. Have to keep in mind that she and Bruce have been together for 50 years or nearly 50 years at that point. She knows her husband really well. She knows his typical behavior. So she thought surely he would have had a piece of pie. This was another sign to her that Bruce never had the chance to make it inside. Couple that with the state of Bruce's truck with his belongings inside and the fact that the clothes Bruce wore Wednesday night, the clothes he was last seen in, were not inside the house in the hamper, and everything was still in its place inside, Maxine was adamant and still is that Bruce did not make it in the house. Notably, there were no signs of a struggle or a break-in or anything of that nature. Grady filed a missing persons report on November 11th with the Cotton County Sheriff's Office. With Bruce's age, he met the criteria in Oklahoma for a silver alert to be issued by Cotton County Emergency Management. So that was issued for people to be on the lookout for him on the same day he was reported missing.
So I'm wondering this. I'm sure a lot of people listening are also wondering this. What was Bruce's state of mind like? Because he's getting up there in age, 69. I'm just kind of wondering if he's still all there.
Maxine has been asked this question directly, and I know I addressed his physical health being well at that time. And Maxine has said he was still perfectly fine mentally. She's directly been asked if he was ever exhibited signs of dementia, to which she said no. So going off of that, we don't have any reason to think that there's necessarily a concern that Bruce could have wandered off. That is a concern sometimes for people who have dementia, that can be a risk. But at this point, we don't have any evidence that Bruce had any mental deficiencies at that time. Law enforcement jumped into action and immediately began searching for Bruce. The search included the use of drones, helicopters, search dogs, troopers on horseback, and all-terrain vehicles. I will post on our Instagram, Key to the Case Podcast, an aerial view of the property because it will help you see how this is such a rural area. There aren't many homes around. However, it's pretty flat and there are not a lot of trees that would make searching more difficult. So using something like a drone or a helicopter should have been pretty effective if he were still in that area, but there was no sign of Bruce at all. And they searched well beyond the general area he was last seen by air. Now, Bruce and Maxine's home is less than a mile north of the Red River, which flows along the Texas-Oklahoma border. It doesn't appear close to the home, but obviously with that distance, it is within walking distance. You start to get more trees and brush kind of along the river, but that area was searched extensively. What I find interesting about the river in this case is it creates a stopping point to the south, meaning it's highly improbable, if not impossible, that he would have swam across the river. So they at least know he could not have gotten beyond that point on his own on foot. The same can't be said for the northeast and west directions, but it's still helpful. Beyond the searches conducted by law enforcement, Bruce's family searched far and wide using all-terrain vehicles they had, and they came up with nothing. They probably didn't expect to find anything because of the thorough searches that were already conducted, but I think if I were in their shoes, I would search too. I mean, it would be hard to accept that he just vanished. About 2.5 weeks after Bruce disappeared, the Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation, or OSBI, announced that they would be assisting the Cotton County Sheriff's Office with the investigation, and they labeled his disappearance as suspicious. They refrained from sharing why they were labeling his disappearance as suspicious, but it's certainly interesting considering we aren't aware of what evidence could have prompted that decision. If Bruce experienced some sort of medical episode or if he left on his own, those possible scenarios don't necessarily rise to the level of being suspicious, but it's possible they use the word suspicious lightly. So I don't want to read too far into it since they didn't give an explanation, but it's still interesting. Around the same time of this announcement, Bruce's family put up a $25,000 reward to encourage anyone with information leading to Bruce's location to come forward to law enforcement. Maxine was desperate for information from anyone who may have seen anything, and she has tried to get Bruce's story out there as much as possible. But part of the problem here is that we are talking about a rural area. The number of people who may have seen something is quite limited. When you consider that Bruce seemed to have gotten quite a distance away since they didn't find him in their searches, the number of people who could have seen him probably increases, but it's still nothing like it would be if someone went missing in 2022 in a populated area where there might be more witnesses and most likely cameras. So this is a factor in this case that doesn't help the investigation. Little information was revealed in the months that followed, but in May 2023, the OSBI described the investigation as ongoing. Then in July 2023, the OSBI, along with Oklahoma Highway Patrol and Cotton County Sheriff's Office, were seen searching various parts of the county, which included a pond near Bruce and Maxine's home. It's unclear which pond was searched, but there are quite a few ponds in the area surrounding their home, in addition to three ponds very close to their home, which I presume were already searched. Seven News reported on the search, but the OSBI would not confirm if the search was related to Bruce's disappearance. They stated that he was still being searched for, but would not say if this search was related to Bruce.
I mean, what else would they be searching for in the pond?
Exactly. I mean, it seems probable that the search was related to Bruce's disappearance. Maybe this was a pond that was not searched in the beginning and they were searching it for the first time. Either way, they did not find Bruce.
I'm probably jumping the gun here a little bit. I'm sure you're going to get into it, but do we have any insight into what Maxine and Grady think happened to Bruce?
Good question. Maxine has always been clear that at the time of Bruce's disappearance, as I said, he didn't have any health issues. And again, she says he never exhibited signs of dementia, which I think is an important question to address. And no one else in Bruce's life has come forward to contradict this. So we have no reason to think otherwise. So although she has made those statements, she has acknowledged the possibility that he could have suffered from a medical episode of some sort that rendered him disoriented and he could have wandered off when he got out of his truck. Maxine worried that if he wandered, he could have gotten to the highway, US Route 70, which is a little more than a mile away from their home. And from there, he could have been picked up by someone else and he could be anywhere. But this does not seem to be her leading theory. In a May 2023 interview with News Nation, she shared that she thinks whatever happened to Bruce happened within the carport, or at least it started within the carport Wednesday night after dinner when he went back home and after he spoke with Grady. Further, Maxine believes someone surprised him when he pulled into the carport, meaning they likely were already there when he pulled in. When the interviewer, Marnie Hughes, asked what evidence there may be to support this, Maxine indicated that law enforcement believes this as well, although they have never publicly stated that. Law enforcement has never said what they think happened to Bruce. But she said there is a lot of information that the investigators can't share with her. So she doesn't directly say it, but there either is no direct evidence of this, or she isn't aware of evidence to support this theory, but the police are, or she knows of evidence that could support this and she just can't share it.
I mean, it could possibly be that there were some tire tracks that didn't match any of the cars that they had on their property.
Great thought on the tire tracks. The only problem with that is that they did have a gravel driveway. So I don't really think you could gather tire impressions from a gravel road. So that is one thought I had too. But then when I looked closer at the map, it does look to be more of a gravel area. But there is a space like behind their barn that I can't really tell if it turns into a dirt area before grass, but it kind of looks like it's dirt. So I suppose if someone went down the gravel driveway and then pulled into this area that is more dirt, then that's something that could leave or you could get impressions from. And that's also somewhere I suppose someone could be parked where they wouldn't be seen when Bruce pulled up. There's also a possibility that, you know, maybe there was a small amount of blood found or just something suspicious found in the area that made it seem like a struggle took place. Although no one has ever mentioned any evidence of a struggle taking place, I think it seems fair to say that there is evidence that Bruce didn't make it inside his house, as we've already discussed. And if he didn't make it into his house, it's not too much of a leap to think that whatever happened started when he got out of his truck. During that interview, Maxine expressed her belief that Bruce did not know his attacker and that it was random. Now, she said in an earlier interview with ABC 7 News, just a few weeks after the disappearance, that she thought it would have to be someone he knew, but she didn't know, you know, what she thought happened. So Maxine's opinion has changed over time, it seems, likely as she's had more time to reflect on the situation, or as she's learned of new information, she shifted into thinking Bruce was a victim of a random crime. Interestingly, in the May 2023 interview, she said she believed law enforcement was close to solving the case, but that someone would need to crack. And I'm here wondering, who are we even talking about? Who needs to crack? Does she have an idea? Or is she just saying in general, someone needs to share information? I don't know. If she does have more information or an idea of who needs to come forward, then I'm sure the OSBI and Cotton County Sheriff's Office told her not to say a word, but inquiring minds want to know.
So you've provided some really good insight into what Maxine thinks happened. Do we know, has Grady talked to the press? Do we know what Grady thinks?
Yeah, I would love to know what Grady thinks, since he was the last person known to see Bruce. And it's also interesting to hear just from the people who are closest to the victim. He has done interviews, plenty of interviews, and he almost always does the interviews with Maxine, like side by side. They do interviews with the media. And I've never seen him give much of an opinion on what he thinks happened. If anything, he tends to kind of just, you know, nod along with what Maxine is suggesting. So that makes me think he most likely agrees with what Maxine is saying. Or if he disagrees with what she's saying, he's holding that back for some reason. Law enforcement hasn't provided an update in a while in Bruce's disappearance. So that brings us to the theories in this case. There is a possibility that Bruce suffered from a medical event of some kind the night he disappeared. The medical episode caused him to be confused and walk away, even though Bruce was reportedly in good health. We know that Grady reported Bruce telling him he had a bit of a cough, so maybe he was feeling off that night. There aren't any medical events I can think of just off the top of my head that would cause him to wander off and never be found that relate to a cough. It would be more concerning if he told Grady he was experiencing a migraine or chest pain, for example, then he might be worried about something like a stroke or heart attack. This theory is certainly possible and worth exploring. However, there are problems with it. For starters, we would have to presume that this event caused him and allowed him to walk such a great distance that he would never be found. And that alone seems unlikely. Also, we would have to believe that this medical event that caused him to disappear set in rather quickly after he interacted with his son, Grady. Grady didn't report any signs that something was wrong with Bruce. So what are the odds that most likely, as soon as Grady left him, he entered into a medical event that caused him to disappear? It is possible, but I believe Bruce probably would have been found through the search efforts if this is what occurred. The Red River was within walking distance. Is there a scenario where Bruce got to the Red River, got in for some reason and was swept away? Yes, but as of now, we don't have evidence to support this idea.
I think it's possible that he suffered some sort of episode. I guess it technically wouldn't have to be right after Grady left. Like, it could have been an hour or two. But if he went into the house for whatever reason and came back out and started having the episode, he would have needed to lock the door and put the keys back inside his truck and then start wandering off. So now that I'm just kind of
thinking out loud, that would be
less likely.
Right, because if he's entering this episode and he's confused, yet he still has the wherewithal to lock the house, impossible. But then I guess why put the keys back in the car and the wallet, phone? Yeah, I am inclined to think that he never made it in the house just because of the scene. But if there is a possibility that he did make it inside, then that kind of opens up different possibilities here. An unlikely, albeit possible, theory is that Bruce decided to leave his life and create a new identity. Considering his vehicle was accounted for and there was no public transportation close by, this likely would have required help from someone else. Who that person could be, no idea. With the information we have, there's no reason to believe Bruce wanted to leave, and there were no mysterious texts or phone calls in Bruce's history or large cash withdrawals. If he were going to leave his life, he probably would do it when Maxine was away, and the comment he made that Grady reported about potentially not sticking his head out on Wednesday could have been to buy time, to allow time for him to get away without anyone noticing immediately. This theory would also explain why the searchers never found Bruce. I imagine this angle was explored by investigators, but considering they have categorized the disappearance as suspicious, it seems unlikely that they think this is a viable theory.
Yeah, I think this one's less likely than the first theory. I'm sure if he had any indications that he was unhappy with his life, Maxine would have noticed that, and Grady as well. Right, so I find it less viable than he had an episode and wandered off.
And it does make you wonder what kind of life he would be looking for anyway. He kind of had a simple life. He had never moved out of this 1 mile radius his entire life. Okay, maybe he was tired of that, but what would he want out of life instead of what he had? I can't answer that question. And who would have helped him? I just think he would have had to have help, and I'm not sure who that person would be. Now, although no one reported Bruce being suicidal, it is a possibility here. Maybe Bruce was struggling. The biggest problems with this theory are that he's never been found, and if they owned any weapons, there were none missing from the home as far as we know. Not that a weapon would have to be involved, but clearly if one were missing from the home, that would be alarming. But he most likely didn't enter his home that night he disappeared. So if he did take a weapon, it would have been in his truck. It is possible that Bruce could have died in this way and he hasn't been found, which has happened in other cases. But again, it seems unlikely. I think if Bruce died the night he vanished, not at the hands of someone else, whether it be by suicide or a medical episode, and he's still in the general vicinity he was last seen, he most likely would have to be in a body of water that wasn't thoroughly checked, such as the ponds, creeks, and the river in the area, or in some hole or space in the ground. It's just hard to understand where he could be.
I think he would have been found by now if this was the case, unless he walked to the highway and hitched a ride somewhere else and did it in a faraway location. I think Maxine definitely would have mentioned if they had any guns that one was missing.
That would be extremely important information.
Yeah.
And I like your idea of, I hadn't really thought of this, if he walked to the highway, got a ride from someone, and then did it somewhere else, that would make more sense. But nobody reported picking someone up along the highway. I guess you could contradict that by saying, well, maybe the person who picked him up was not from the area. This is more of a rural highway where it seems like it'd mostly be frequented by people who live in the area who would have heard about his disappearance. There was that silver alert that was issued to people in Oklahoma. So you'd think everyone would hear about it. But yeah, there's definitely a scenario here where he could have been picked up by someone who didn't even end up hearing that Bruce went missing, didn't even know who they were picking up, and didn't report it.
And you never really know what people are struggling with. But I think Maxine would have mentioned if he seemed off, seemed a little more depressed, right?
You would hope, yeah. that would be something that's mentioned. And we say it pretty much anytime it's brought up that, yeah, you don't know what someone's going through. Even if they seem like they're doing okay, you don't know. So we try to focus when we talk about suicide a little more on the logistics and the circumstances of the case and how that could relate to a suicide rather than the mental health of the person, unless there's obvious evidence that they were struggling. But in this case, yeah, she hasn't said anything like that. But again, you do kind of wonder, I wonder what the statement he made to Grady, like how that could play into any theory, assuming that's true and correct, that he said he had a bit of a cough and he might not be seen the next day. It feels so relevant when that person then disappears, never to be seen again. The final theory is that Bruce was a victim of foul play. And as previously stated, it seems that Maxine believes someone unknown to Bruce came upon him when he parked his vehicle and got out. This certainly seems possible when you consider the scene of Bruce's truck, since it was unlocked and his belongings were inside on the driver's seat. Assuming the detail about his phone, wallet, and keys being on the driver's seat is accurate. I found that to be interesting because you don't normally drive while sitting on those items. So I was trying to understand what scenario would cause those items to end up there. Could someone have approached his vehicle with a weapon as he was gathering his belongings and getting out of his truck? Maybe that would cause him to drop those in the seat, or they told him to drop them in his seat. Or someone who harmed him could have just simply put those items there. Alternatively, if he was experiencing a medical episode and felt confused, anything can happen when you're confused. I don't know. Do you have any ideas on this? I may be reading too far into such a small detail, but sometimes small details in these cases can be significant or telling.
Yeah, it is weird. I mean, no one ever sits on their stuff while they're driving, like their phone and their wallet and their, and the keys were obviously in the driver's seat too, but it is weird. Yeah, it seems likely that someone may have just tossed the stuff back in the car onto that driver's seat.
Yeah, like maybe if they came upon him as he's getting out of his car, those things were in his hands and
they told him to throw them back in the car.
Yeah, or they fell out of his hands and then the person put them back in the vehicle. For what reason? No idea. I'm not even sure why you'd want to touch anything. But yeah, it just feels like it has to be significant in this case for some reason. Oh, I mean, also, those are items you tend to keep in your pocket, or at least your wallet you tend to keep in your pocket when you're driving. So
yeah, if it's not in my pocket, I'll throw it in a cup holder that's empty or just the console. But, you know, no. I'm never just sitting on it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know what Bruce's habits were. Meaning, did he keep his phone and wallet in his pockets? I'm not sure. Getting further into the possibility of foul play, I struggle with the thought of this being a random person targeting Bruce, whom they don't know, for several reasons, but primarily because there's no clear motive to harm him and they live in such a rural area. Robbery most likely wasn't the motive since his wallet and cash were left behind and the home was not broken into. If a random person were driving along the highway, they could have gotten off and looked for a random home to target or to break into. And maybe Bruce and Maxine's home was the first one they saw. That is not completely far-fetched. But nothing was stolen, and Grady didn't see any mysterious vehicles parked on Bruce and Maxine's property that night. There was nothing to raise any eyebrows. I mean, the person could have parked behind the barn, kind of as I suggested earlier on. But again, you know, you'd think maybe Grady or Bruce would have seen the person. I know Maxine's latest comment about what could have happened indicated she believed that this was a random crime, but it's hard to piece together with the information we have. She could have more information that is swaying her this way that she just can't share. Alternatively, Bruce could have been targeted by someone who knew him. However, I couldn't find any information that indicated anyone had a problem with Bruce. I only found information to the contrary, and I'm not sure who would have something to gain by Bruce not being around anymore. But if someone targeted Bruce, I can see them picking a time when they knew Maxine wouldn't be around. And if that were the case, this had to be someone who knew Maxine was going to be away. I would think Grady would have to be looked at since he was the last person known to see Bruce alive. He is the only person who can account for Bruce's likely last moments, and much of the vague story we have is based on his statements. So even that comment that we've talked about a couple of times now that Bruce made, well, that's based on Grady's account. And there's no reason to believe Grady's not telling the truth, but it's just coming from one person. That person's going to be interesting in any disappearance, and the people closest to the victim have to be examined. But again, I have no information to present in regard to how Brady would benefit from his father's disappearance. He already had the farm. Bruce gave Grady the farm in 2016. Although it could have been a heat of the moment situation, a fight that went too far, but there's no evidence of that. It's also certainly interesting that Maxine was away when Bruce disappeared. It just seems like that is significant within several of these theories. Similarly to Bruce leaving his life, foul play would explain why he's never been found. He could be anywhere. I was thinking that a geofence warrant or reverse location warrant could be useful in this case to potentially identify people who were in this very specific rural area at the time of Bruce's disappearance. But I learned recently that at the end of last year, Google, which historically received far more geofence warrants than any other entity, changed their policy on location history data. So that data would now be stored on individual users' devices, and whatever remains would be encrypted. So they would not have this data available in the way they did before. So if they don't have it, they can't respond to geofence warrants. They're effectively taking their own ability to comply with these requests away. The articles I read indicated that this would be rolled out over the course of a year, but I'm not completely clear on where this change stands today or if this was a tactic that was considered in Bruce's case. There are some cases we cover where I have a theory that I think is most likely and others where I really have no clue. And with this one, I don't feel strongly about any one theory, but because the investigators have labeled Bruce's disappearance as suspicious, it makes me lean toward the idea that someone harmed Bruce.
I'm kind of rolling things around in my head. I have no idea what would have happened to him. I guess I'm inclined to agree with Maxine. I just have no clue. This one's weird.
I know. Since we have no clue, we need you guys to tell us what you think happened here. But I really hope for the sake of Bruce's family that we'll have an update soon in this case, whatever that may be. Bruce is a white male with gray hair and blue eyes. He is 5'11", weighing between 210 and 220 pounds. He wears glasses with transition lenses, and he was last seen wearing blue jeans, a striped polo shirt, and steel-toed boots. Anyone who has information on Bruce's disappearance should contact the OSBI at 800-522-8017 or email tips@osbi.ok.gov. Thank you all for tuning in today. Please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the show. That is all for now, but we'll be back next week with a new case. Bye.
Bye.
Do you love true crime podcasts and true crime documentaries?
If so, you gotta check out our podcast, True Crime Obsessed, where we recap the true crime documentaries everybody's watching.
We say everything you're thinking and probably screaming at your TV.
We've been at the top of the podcast charts for almost 9 years, and we have over 400 episodes for you to check out right now.
We cover the cases everyone's talking about, and we also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
With over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now's the time to give us a try.
Find True Crime Obsessed wherever you get your podcasts.